Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. In office for just a year, Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James today delivers his first State of the City address. Good morning and welcome to a special edition of Up to Date. We're coming to you live this morning from the Convention Center downtown, where we'll carry the speech live and talk with the mayor and members of the City Council after his address. As he enters his second year in office, the mayor stands at a crossroads. With major financial decisions looming on the city budget, his call for $1 billion in infrastructure spending, a multi-billion dollar sewer project, a proposed streetcar system, and even a new downtown convention hotel. Today we should get a clearer look at his priorities, and the mayor himself, who recently told a gathering of neighborhood residents that it was taking longer than he had hoped for positive change to occur. With us in the minutes before this speech begins is Lynn Horsley. She covers City Hall for the Kansas City Star. And Lynn, always good to have you here.
Good to be with you.
Well, just how big a speech is this for Mayor Sly James today, Lynn?
Well, I think it is a chance for him to recap the accomplishments that he feels he's made during this first year, and also a chance for him to lay out his plan for the next year and the rest of this first term.
You know, in a nutshell, his challenge is money, right? I mean, there's a whole lot of need out there. I'm talking about streetcars and sewer projects and downtown convention hotels and infrastructure, and not all that much money to do all this with, right?
Exactly. The mayor has made the point that we are a huge city geographically, and we have fewer than 500,000 people. And other cities like New York and L.A. have far more people and a larger tax base and a much smaller geographical area and the infrastructure that's involved in that. So, yes, he does have some tough issues. The city manager has proposed a tough budget that requires cuts not only to parks and public works, as we've seen for years, but finally to the firefighters. And they are pushing back. They don't want to see those cuts.
So really a major crossroads for the mayor right now, no question about that.
This will be a test of his political will and of the support of the community for him.
I should just point out we're sitting here in the convention hall at downtown Kansas City looking south towards the Liberty Memorial, the big public TV tower out on the horizon here. This ceremony just beginning. Mayor James is scheduled to begin his speech in about 8 or 9 minutes here. So, Lynn, what do you think the mayor will say today when it comes to addressing all the needs that are on his plate?
Well, I think, first of all, he's going to celebrate what's good about Kansas City, and that's part of why we're here today.
He's a cheerleader.
Normally, the State of the City address is given at City Hall, but this year he's chosen to do it at Bartle Hall, and especially in this beautiful new ballroom, which is a community asset. We're overlooking the gorgeous Kauffman Center,
absolutely,
which opened on his watch and has been a tremendous asset and is getting national attention. So I think first he's going to say, we're back in the nation's forefront. We're part of a positive conversation that the nation is having about Kansas City. But he's also going to set out the challenges that we face in terms of decent transit, decent infrastructure, and decent schools.
You know, how popular is the mayor? Give us some context, Lynn Horsley. How popular is this mayor 1 year into his term?
I think he's pretty popular. I think the sense at City Hall is kind of a fresh start. Frankly, Mark Funkhauser was kind of a dour mayor. The atmosphere was pretty negative. He didn't get along well with the city council, and he alienated a lot of the business community. I think Mayor James has good relations with the city council. They're pretty much in lockstep with him. He has a good rapport with the city manager, despite the tough budget challenges. And I think he has a great relationship with the business community. He has been a cheerleader for the city. He's lured some new businesses to the city. He's reached across the state line and has a good rapport with the mayor of Kansas City, Kansas. He's excited about Google coming to Kansas City. So I think he's got a good groundswell of support. The challenge now will be to take that to the next level.
You know, some folks joke that this may be the longest political honeymoon in American history. Sly James, again, as you just pointed out, following in the footsteps of Mark Funkhauser, not very popular as a mayor, defeated in a run for a second term. Clearly, Sly James appears to be still riding a wave of one kind or another that may be courtesy of Mark Funkhauser.
Yeah, he's got generally a lot of goodwill behind him. I think people want him to succeed because they feel like if he succeeds, the rest of the city will succeed. He's also made a number of trips to Washington, D.C. In fact, he's heading to Washington right after this speech. I think he's getting noticed by mayors across the country. Villaraigosa in L.A. has tapped him to be a big part of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. So I think people feel like if the mayor of Kansas City does well, then the whole city and indeed the whole region can do well.
I should point out there are a couple of hundred guests in front of me here. One of those guests, Mike Burke, the man who lost to Sly James a year ago in that race for mayor, and maybe one of the most gracious losers we've had.
Absolutely. The tone of that election was so contrary to what we're seeing on the national stage. We had two rivals for the mayor's race who got along, who actually had a substantive contest, not a contest of personalities. And ever since Mike Burke lost, he's offered his hand and help to the mayor. He's part of some initiatives that the mayor is trying to do in terms of promoting the arts in Kansas City. So that's another example where at least locally, people are trying to make politics work.
We're visiting with Lynn Horsley, who covers City Hall for the Kansas City Star, in just the minutes leading up to Mayor Sly James' first State of the City address here in Kansas City. You mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Lynn, that his relations with the city council, pretty positive so far. Again, that's in pretty sharp contrast to what we saw a couple years ago.
Yeah, we sort of had 4 years of war between the mayor and the city council, and they wasted a lot of time on some petty rivalries and battles, and I think people now feel like the city itself has challenges that are too important, too substantive, and they don't have time to waste fighting over the role of the mayor's wife at City Hall and some of those other battles that they fought for 4 years.
Now, he's expressed, that he being the mayor, has expressed some concern of late, Lynn, about the slow pace of change, of things maybe not moving as quickly as he'd like. He's also said Kansas City can't be afraid to break out of the box a little bit. Is there any sense that he wants to pick up the pace, that perhaps he's a little frustrated here?
I think that is the case, and especially with, say, the streetcar initiative. That's a bold effort they're trying to do, to have streetcars run from the river to Crown Center. It'd be sort of the first fixed rail we would have in the city after decades of trying. And the business community is having some pushback. They're being asked to bear the brunt of that cost, the downtown business community. We've tried numerous times to get citywide voters to support light rail or streetcars, and most of those votes have failed. And so now they're trying to get the business community and the people downtown who would benefit, and there is some pushback from the business community.
That's Lynn Horsley from the Star. Mayor Sly James now taking the stage to give his first State of the City address. A standing ovation here in the hall at the convention hall for Mayor Sly James. Let's go to the podium now for his address.
And good morning. Please be seated. It is my pleasure and honor today to fulfill a duty assigned by the charter. An honor that 53 men and one woman have performed in their role as mayor of this great city. During high times and low, war times and peace, boom times and bust, the mayors of Kansas City have taken a moment to talk to the residents about the city that we all love. And this morning, I'd like to welcome each and every resident of Kansas City, my mayor pro tem, members of the city council, members of the diplomatic corps, representatives of the courts, and the four counties that Kansas City calls home. I would be remiss today if I didn't thank my old friend and college buddy, Father Don Farnan. I won't tell you any stories about us going to school together. I promised him I would. But he got us started off right. He and I go back a long way. And although we've added a few years and several pounds to our friendship, I'm glad that our bond remains. Ours is the type of friendship that, where the two of us may not speak for months or even years, but when we see each other, it's as if we had never forgotten where we were. No time has passed at all. This morning in particular, I'd also like to thank my fellow mayors from across the area who have come to be at this speech today. More than ever, our success happens if we work together. We're connected in both real and emotional terms. Kansas City's success relies on our surrounding suburbs. And each of your cities is invested in maintaining the center city. So it's my honor to welcome my friends, the mayors of the great cities of Grandview, Mayor Steve Dennis, Raytown, Mayor Dave Bauer, Independence Mayor Don Rimel, and Blue Springs Mayor Carson Ross. You represent, just by the virtue of your attendance here today, one of the primary themes of this speech. Nearly a year ago today, I was elected to your ranks. And since that time, we have begun to form relationships and partnerships. We are friends, and we are neighbors, and we understand the value of being both. So thank you for honoring Kansas City with your presence here this morning. Thank you for your support of Kansas City, and thank you for your willingness to partner with us in our joint success. If any other mayors manage to sneak in without being noticed, please stand so that we can recognize you. And let me once again give my personal thanks to those four mayors who are here. In case you thought I forgot, it's my privilege to welcome my old friend and the only other man who has the ability to call himself a mayor of Kansas City. That would be Mayor Joe Reardon. In a time when cross-state rivalries, both on the hardwood and in reality, grab headlines, we have the opportunity to work together side by side on a repeated basis over the past year or two. 2 weeks ago, it was my privilege to attend Mayor Reardon's State of the Government Address in Kansas City, Kansas. And what I heard confirmed my thoughts about the educational quality of Rockhurst College, because I was able to confirm his great oratory schools. Joe and I have spent so much time together over the past year that we're thinking about getting a joint booking agent. But our partnership is real, and it's one that we want to expand to include all mayors who want to join it, because it is only by including all that we will achieve our greatest success. We genuinely enjoy working with each other. And I think that the attention that has been given to our work together across the region has caught the attention of residents and taught us once and for all that regionalism is not simply a word, it is an attitude, and it is converted into action. The only border war between Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas is on the basketball court or on a football field. We're partners for practical and personal reasons, because a win for Kansas City is a win for Kansas City. So thank you, Mayor Reardon, for being — I don't know if he is here. I don't see him. There you are. There you are, Joe. Thank you, Mayor Reardon, for being here. Thank you, Joe. For as long as many can remember, this speech has actually taken place at City Hall. But today, we gathered outside of the hall in another civic space, another public investment, and another community asset. This morning, I've asked you all to gather here in a LEED-certified ballroom at the Kansas City Convention Center, one of the largest and most energy-efficient buildings in the entire nation. There are many reasons I wanted to host this speech here in this space. First and foremost, it's absolutely gorgeous. My thanks to Oscar McGaskey, Harvest Productions, and the entire Kansas City team here at the ballroom for all you have done and all the amazing work that you've put into this. And for anyone who's looking for a unique space to host an event, please contact Oscar McGaskey. I don't have Oscar's number, but he'll be easy to find. This room has a very clear advantage. It overlooks the new and spectacular Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. While the soaring shells of the Softy design were paid for with private funds, they sit atop a garage many of us use today, paid for by the people of Kansas City. The roof of that garage creates a public park on the front lawn of the Kauffman Center. It's also a tribute to our city's commitment to sustainability and the ecology. It is the country's second largest green roof parking center, period. It is second only to Millennium Park in Chicago, and that's pretty good company to keep. This location emphasizes the importance of partnerships. The Kauffman Center complements the city's grand ballroom, and our investment in the Arts District garage is essential to the success of the Kauffman Center. Now that the center and this room benefit greatly from the proximity of one another, it has achieved one of the world's great architectural and performing arts icons. Partnerships pay dividends because the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. From day one, this council and I have worked to set a new tone. It's a respectful, forward-looking attitude that understands that while we may disagree on a specific issue, that we should conduct the people's business while respecting one another and respecting our positions as leaders in this city. We know that we often represent competing interests, but it's a testament to this council and to each individual member that most of the legislation that we have passed this year has been passed with little or no dissent. That doesn't mean that we always start at the same place, but rather it's a testament to our relationship and commitment that we seek to arrive at the same place while looking for shared viewpoints and common ground. Most importantly, we always try to hold the interests of our city above those interests of ourselves and our competing interests. I consider each member of this council to be my friend and partner. This city's continued success is dependent upon our continued ability to work well together. I believe the citizens of Kansas City appreciate this tone, appreciate this attitude. I know that I do. And please help me thank each member of your city council for the fine work they've done, the hours they have devoted, and the things that they have tried to do to make this city best. As you know, our government is comprised of three separate but interdependent parts. There's the mayor, there's the council, and there's the city manager. Only when all three of those parts work together in partnership and harmony are we at our best, are we able to work most efficiently and effectively. I've already discussed the great relationship that I have with the council, and I hope that they have with me. Let us discuss now our relationship that we jointly have with our city manager. In our government, the mayor and council set policy. The city manager enacts that policy and puts it into effect on a day-to-day basis in the operations of this city. I'm pleased to report that our city manager, Troy Schulte, has partnered with us since day one. In the coming days, Troy will present to the council his pension reform plan. He is committed to the council's priorities, and he's worked extremely hard to keep this city financially sound. Even while other cities lay off 30% of their police departments, abandon their pension plans entirely, or in some cases go bankrupt, we're charting a much more positive and sustainable path. So we're all proud to call Troy Schulte our partner in this endeavor. Thank you, Chair. Last year, it was my great honor to be able to participate in the selection process that elevated Daryl Forte to be the Kansas City Police Chief. The Chief and I have breakfast almost every Tuesday morning. We've gotten to be good friends. I've gotten to learn about his thoughts and attitudes and approaches, and he mine. He has instilled a new attitude and approach that I believe will lead to reductions in crime for Kansas City across the board. We're fortunate to have his leadership, and I'm very honored to call him my friend. Chief Forte and the brave men and women of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department wear the uniform and make a difference every day. Very specifically, in conjunction with our smart, new, and aggressive prosecutor, Gene Peters Baker, a new partnership with residents, our police are arresting criminals quickly. They're being tried, convicted, and taken off the street. It's becoming very clear that if you are going to commit crime in Kansas City, you're going to do some time in Kansas City. So together with the police department and the city, we're working to deploy technology to keep citizens safe, police and visitors safe, and to build partnerships that will save and protect lives. Gene, thank you for everything that you do. Chief Forte, I believe, is on spring break, but Gene, please stand and be recognized. I'd also like to take a moment to wish Officer Bradley Bailey, a young officer who was injured last week when a vehicle speeding through an intersection broadsided his patrol van, flipped it 3 or 4 times before it came to rest upside down against a pole. Officer Bailey was injured, but God was with him that day. He's now able to be home recovering for his injuries, and Officer Bailey, we look forward to your return to active duty. Our budget, our proposed Kansas City budget, has issued a challenge to our firefighters, and I see a number of them here today. It was a challenge that clearly reflected our current budget difficulties. It also reflected the reality of funding staff positions with a tax that will soon expire. In a few short years, the public safety sales tax will expire. We use that tax to construct, build, replace, refurbish both physical plants and equipment. But now we're using it to fund the salaries of people. And it is always a bad idea to use a tax that will sunset to pay salaries. The citizens of Kansas City expect us to align our budget in a way that anticipates the loss of those tax revenues. I've lived in Kansas City a long time, and I can tell you that we seldom prepare for the loss of tax revenues. Instead, we work feverishly at the end of the time when they're about to expire to make sure that they're renewed. I'm a Marine, and we used to call that gunpoint diplomacy. That philosophy has created a jumble mess of revenue streams for which we are constantly going back to our voters seeking renewal. I understand the appeal of dedicated tax streams. As a voter, it tells you exactly what you're voting for and how the money will be spent. But as we look to cut the fire department budget by 1.4% this year over last year, we should also understand the danger of tying people's salaries to a tax that's going to expire in sunset. This is the same discussion that we have as we struggle with the idea of renewing our earnings tax every 5 years. As we study ways to adjust and solidify our diverse revenue streams, we need to learn from the mistakes that we've made in the past and not simply repeat them. We also need to understand that these dedicated and diverse tax streams have, in effect, left our city with few options with which to address large citywide issues such as $600 million of deferred maintenance, or a 100-year-old water supply system. It would be intellectually dishonest to ignore the fact that these proposed budgetary cuts and reductions to the fire department budget are the subject of much discussion and strong sentiment. I understand the sentiment, but it's easy sometimes in situations such as this to stake out positions on complex issues based not on facts, but on emotion and fear. The basic budgetary facts are that we have almost no growth in our general fund revenues over the past 4 years. Unfortunately, we don't expect any growth over the next 2. While we have been flat in terms of revenue, our personnel costs have continued to rise. We've cut services and city personnel to the bone. We've budgeted only $8 million to take care of resurfacing over 6,000 miles of road. We are continuing to pay over $408,000 a square mile for fire protection. No one on this council, no one in my office, no one in this city takes these issues lightly. No one is here to make this city less safe. We have not and will not forsake safety. However, we have a great deal of need in this city and very little money with which to address those needs. This is a period in which all must sustain fair but reasonable cuts in order to survive as a whole. And together as partners, I believe that the city and the fire department can find a solution that concentrates on saving the jobs of these dedicated professionals while bringing their budget more in alignment with our city budget as a whole. We can recognize and encourage retirements and adjust some benefits to work towards the reality of our current budget situation. And I appreciate the willingness of Chief Dyer and the firefighters to talk through this difficult situation. And I understand that the key to recognizing past mistakes is to simply not repeat them. I'd also like to say that I had the pleasure at the St. Patrick's Day parade on Saturday of seeing a bunch of firefighters. They walked up to me, they extended their hands. They did so honorably and professionally. It was a class act. I appreciate that very much because they know that we're in this together, and it is only by staying together that we're going to get out of it. So I appreciate the professionalism that you showed on Saturday and the professionalism that you're showing now. Chief Dyer and the Kansas City Fire Department provide extraordinary service, and for their dedication to this city, they are absolutely deserving of our respect and thanks. Early in my term as mayor, we declared this city open for business. Shortly thereafter, we declared ourselves to be the city of entrepreneurs. But we can't just make pronouncements without action. Councilman Scott Taylor, Mayor Pro Tem Serco, Councilman Reed, and Councilman Wagner of the Special Committee on Small Business worked tirelessly over a period of months, meeting with businesses during hours, after hours, on Saturdays and evenings. And they came up with 67 specific suggestions on how to make it easier for small business to work and grow in Kansas City. I'm proud of their tremendous effort, but I'm even prouder of the fact that we have already instituted most of those 67 recommendations, and those that haven't been instituted are in process of being instituted. This is just another example, just one more example, of your city leadership and the city working together to make sure that things that need to be done get done. This is your leadership, not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. I'm also proud of our efforts and our work to get companies like Data Systems International to locate downtown. The CEO of DSI told us that the primary reason for relocating downtown is the vibrant atmosphere that the talent they recruit demands. This statement is becoming increasingly common. This is witnessed by the fact that there is an increase in downtown residency, and that suggests that there is a new shift from the outward suburban approach to the inward residential approach in downtown and urban areas. Additionally, the General Services Administration recently announced the relocation of over 1,000 federal workers in downtown in 2014. When they move to downtown, they're going to take up existing office space. Thereby, they'll reduce the office rate vacancy. In the last year, we have welcomed the addition of 2 new corporate headquarters, 4 high-tech and energy-related companies to the Crossroad. We've retained 2 of our largest anchor employees and signed them to long-term leases. In the process, we've reclaimed the West Edge and the Plaza situations, successfully retaining hundreds of Kansas City employees. In short, our new approach is paying off, and we're seeing results. We're striking a good balance. We can compete if we partner with businesses. In each of these deals, we have tried to ensure that the taxpayer is not on the hook for any more than the deal is worth to them. We'll continue to listen to and partner with businesses to capitalize on our public investments and focus on a goal of reducing our downtown vacancy rate in offices by 10% over the next 3 years. We're very pleased that just this last week, after an extensive search, we were able to find our new president and CEO of the Kansas City Economic Development Corporation. We found him right here in our own backyard. Pete Fullerton has devoted over 22 years of his career to economic development right across the river in the Northland. We're excited to have him here as we develop an aggressive, innovative approach to economic development that focuses not just on buildings and real estate, but on the people who are engaged. Not just on one side of the river, but on both. And not just on one side of truce, but on both. We are confident that Pete Fullerton, with his experience, knowledge, and devotion to economic development, will do exactly that. Pete, if you're here, please stand and be recognized. In 3 days, the election that bestowed upon me the tremendous honor of being your mayor. And the responsibilities that I hold will be 1 year old. And to be honest, I'm still a bit blown away by the fact that so many people voted for me. I'm extremely gratified that of the 70,382 people who voted in the last election, they all say they voted for me. Imagine that. There's a renewed optimism in Kansas City, and I understand that I may have been given a longer honeymoon than some others, but I don't see why we should end a good thing. Since taking office last May, I've done over 500 speaking appearances, averaging more than two a day. There's a hunger in this city to get moving and to hear from the mayor that we are headed in the right direction. What I've noticed in each of these audiences is a palpable desire to believe that we can be great. There's an eagerness to do something big together. Our residents want straight talk, data-driven decision-making, and realistic plans. To that end, we promised that we would implement a Kansas City STAT program, and we've done that. We've been in the process of examining our departments. We've questioned their practices and procedures. We've done it in public, and we've done it with a reporting system that ensures accountability. We have looked at our progress and our setbacks, and we are taking every effort to make sure that we eliminate the setbacks and enhance our progress. Our residents deserve a city that makes decisions based on data, best practices, and public dialogue. But they also want to live in a city that inspires and aspires. My goal in this first year is not to squander the goodwill that you have given me. Together, we can build partnerships that respect one another. We are a city that's on the verge, but we need to build trust with our residents, that the money they send to our coffers at City Hall will be used efficiently and effectively. Together, we must find a way to balance the need to rebuild our infrastructure with the need to limit the tax burden on our citizens. In this endeavor, like everything else, we who hold office, we have sought to build partnerships with the residents. As promised, I reconstituted and reappointed members of the Citizens Commission on Municipal Revenue to make recommendations on how best to examine and streamline our revenue sources. And I believe together that we can make those choices after we receive their report. We need partners because we are a uniquely large city. We can't do everything alone. We're a city that relies on the diverse nature of our neighborhoods to attract new residents. We're a city that provides all the amenities of a great metropolitan area, but at a low cost of living. Within our city limits, you can find a studio apartment that overlooks the river or a house on 1 acre of land with your own private pond. Our size is one of our most important positive attributes, but it also contributes to some of our challenges. Kansas City is 8 times as large as San Francisco. We have over 6,600 lane miles of streets, all of which need to be plowed, maintained, and resurfaced and patched. We have over 5,000 miles of water and sewer lines, a lot of which is over 100 years old. We have as much infrastructure as Los Angeles, California, a city of 8 million people. We have 1,460 people per square mile. Los Angeles has 8,000. And yet we have about the same amount of infrastructure that we have to take care of as Los Angeles does. We have to do it with 5.5 times fewer people, however. So you can do the math. As daunting as some may find this, we must address these citywide issues now because they are not going to get any better. We must also address our need to grow our population base. So how do we grow in a smart way? How do we become a truly smart city? So as a city, we need to do two things that businesses already know about. We need to keep our customers happy, and we need to attract new ones. If we can fix what we have and then build our population base, we'll lower the tax burden for everyone. We're a beautiful city whose backbone is public investment. We've rebuilt our downtown into a city center we can all be proud of, but those improvements haven't been cheap. We continue to pay debt service on our investments, but we made a value decision that investing in our city center was important, not just for us, but for those residents and suburbs around us because they are dependent on the vitality of this city to a large extent. 75 years ago, our civic leaders, people who held the positions that I and our city council and manager now hold, made a decision. They decided to put people back to work by investing public dollars in public infrastructures and amenities. Those public infrastructures and amenities are still in use today. City Hall will turn 75 years old this spring. The Jackson County Courthouse still stands as a testament to architecture. The municipal auditorium attached to this grand space is a testament to the spirit and craftsmanship in this city. This convention center where we are holding this event is another monument. The Sprint Center, host of the Big 12 tournament for many years to come. The Power and Light District, flamboyant host to many of St. Patrick's Day functions over the weekend. We owe a great deal to Mayor Kay Barnes, who saw what others could not and who remade our downtown into a place that draws people in rather than runs them out. In the last decade, we've added over 10,000 residents to our downtown center. Taxpayer investments in partnership with private investors are doing exactly what we hoped they would, and that is making downtown a place where businesses call home and people want to live. We're starting to see interest from businesses that want to connect with the energy of downtown. Companies that want to recruit young talent from around the country are telling me as they announce their moves to downtown that that's where they want to be because that's where the action is. These businesses are moving in the spaces built under the leadership of Mayors Berkeley and Cleaver, overlooking a remade downtown spearheaded by Mayor Barnes. We owe each of these mayors our gratitude and thanks. It would be a mistake to think that our renaissance is over. It is far from complete. After billions in both public and private investments, we still need to connect our assets. We are like so many pearls laying on the ground without strings that bring them together to make a full and complete necklace. Our city's greatest asset is that we're spread out. But for our downtown, spread out poses too many challenges. On Friday, we submitted a complete and comprehensive application to the U.S. Department of Transportation for a Tiger Grant for our downtown streetcar program. We're asking the federal government to partner with us in this endeavor. Councilman Johnson, with the assistance of Councilman Glover and the entire council, Councilman Johnson has worked his tail off to ensure that the studies were completed, the ordinances were passed. Councilman Glover worked on the zoning and the other issues that are out there. Everybody dotted the I's and crossed the T's to make sure that we met that deadline. So congratulations to my council friends, particularly Councilman Johnson and Councilman Glover. We are closer now than we have ever been to having transit in this city. This evening, I'll leave for Washington, D.C. for a meeting tomorrow with Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood. We're going to press our case face to face, and I am honored that I will be there with my good friend, the County Executive Mike Sanders. County Executive Sanders, has been a steadfast and earnest partner in finding ways to bring transit to this city. His commuter rail concept and ideas are moving forward, and he has been a great partner with us, recognizing the interconnectedness of the streetcar program and commuter rail system. It's an honor to work with Mike. It's not just on this project, but we have forged a relationship and friendship that works across different levels and lines. We work together because we need to work together. It's the most efficient way of recognizing and honoring our residents in both the county and the city. So, Mike, thank you for your friendship and your partnership. I really do appreciate it. Together, when we're in Washington tomorrow, we're going to present a united front for transit with our friends in Washington. Government, residents, businesses together will all make this a reality. It'll be an investment that'll pay dividends for each sector. I want to make sure that we all recognize that these public investments need support of business and the residents of this community. We cannot do it alone. We are often asked to support business expansion through rebates, tax abatements, incentives, or otherwise. We've done that. With the downtown streetcar, we're asking business to invest in this project with us. We'll work to make it as fair of a deal as absolutely possible, because it is in our best interest to make sure that it is fair to everyone, but we simply must get this done. Layering investments in strategic ways is the only way to maximize our return on the investment. Scattered approaches to reinvestment simply don't work. Rebuilding our core cannot come at the expense of suburbs, and supporting our suburbs cannot come at the expense of failing to rebuild our core. We need growth in both places in order to increase our municipal momentum. But understand that property taxes are higher in the surrounding areas because of the depressed home values in the core. If we can't repopulate our inner city, a disproportionate tax burden will continue to be placed on the surrounding suburbs. Across the city, we need to invest in repairing our city's aging infrastructure and our neighborhoods. We need streets, curbs, and sidewalks. We need to address our sewer and mechanical systems. We have over 12,000 vacant boarded-up residences and another 2,000 vacant boarded-up commercial buildings. We cannot simply ignore these things. Dollar for dollar, our public investments are leveraging private investment, but we must accelerate our growth. For each dollar that we invest in infrastructure, the multiplied economic impact in terms of jobs that are created is substantial. We need both improvement and the jobs created by those improvements. We're building partnerships that are paying off. A month ago, I joined Congressman Cleaver and neighborhood leaders to announce a groundbreaking partnership with the Make It Right Foundation. Together, a nonprofit, private investors, and the city will leverage the infrastructure improvements we've made in the Green Impact Zone to take an abandoned school and turn it into a jewel in the inner city. Bancroft School will live again, and it will be a LEED certified sustainable building and asset to the community. And do you know what happens when people start to take interest in their communities again? We all know. Things get better. In the neighborhood surrounding the new Bancroft School project, crime is already down 23%. That's over the last 2 years. That's the type of progress that we're looking for across the entire city. That's why we are seeing more private investment. But we can go further and be smarter while we build these solid partnerships with neighborhoods throughout the city. If we layer investments strategically, we'll increase their impact. It's far more effective and far less expensive to only tear up a street once. We need to be more effective in how we approach city infrastructure problems in order to take advantages of new technology. I'd like to take a moment to highlight the producers of the technology that you're watching. It's a story that I think that we can duplicate over and over again. ScreenPoint just opened an office and will soon begin hiring here in Kansas City. They come to us from the Silicon Valley, and they represent some of the best and the brightest who have dedicated and decided to make a bet on Kansas City. They're MIT, Stanford, and Harvard graduates with new and innovative products that combine geocoding, data management, and video gaming resolution. We're exploring a partnership with them and their technology that will not only help our city use data more efficiently and effectively, but plan our infrastructure work more productively. It will also serve up apps that we may be able to sell and produce a revenue stream to other cities. We're a proving ground, and our partnership will produce revenue. They are entrepreneurs that have opened up the shop in Kansas City. They've opened up in the city of entrepreneurs. What we are certain of is that our partnership will save us dollars in efficiencies built on connected data and smart decisions. So thank you, Paul Daugherty, the CEO of ScreenPoint, who returned from Shanghai, where he is doing work for the Disney theme parks there. I think he's here today. It's really fitting that the city that gave us Mickey Mouse and where he was born is where ScreenPoint is working to make Disney theme parks safer and more attractive to visitors. The great mouse may have been born here, but we're certainly no Mickey Mouse organization. Paul, are you here? Thank you, Paul. I truly hope that the partnerships we're building will be a vital and enduring legacy of this administration. As I think about the Bancroft School project, for example, in Mannheim Park, I'm reminded that the goal of revitalizing our core city neighborhoods six square blocks at a time depends on a partnership with our most important partners, our residents. The state of our city is getting stronger because the efforts of Kansas Citians who believe again in their city is getting stronger. In reality, though, we still suffer from too many whose first reaction to any new concept or idea is, we can't do that because, instead of what if. The upswing in confidence, however, despite our difficulties and insecurities, is noticeable. I grew up not far from Bancroft School. As I got out of the car for the announcement, two things struck me. The first was that Congressman Cleaver was already up on the front porch doing his thing. He was standing on the porch talking to people there, and I noticed women were fixing their hair, handing their kids, calling people on the phone to tell them who was there on the porch with them. That's his legacy of connection, compassion, friendliness, accessibility. It's one I admire and aspire to. But I will say that I had one thing on the congressman. We made that announcement on President's Day, and so there were kids out in the street running around, riding bikes, talking and playing. When my truck rolled up, they gathered around thinking that maybe somebody important was going to get out of the vehicle with the tinted windows. If they were disappointed when I got out, they didn't show it. But it was what one of the boys said when he came up to me that really struck me and something that I've always remembered. He said, "Mayor James, you grew up in a neighborhood just like ours, didn't you?" And I said, "Yep, sure did." I don't have a whole lot of power except will of personality. But what I do have is the ability to tell that young man in the middle of 43rd Street, just prior to the announcement that will transform his neighborhood, that I did, in fact, grow up in a neighborhood just like his. Not only that, I knew the street. I'd ridden bikes there. I had friends that went to Bancroft School. Some of my friends had lived in that very neighborhood. You know, this job can often be distant and somewhat impersonal, but in that moment, standing there in Mannheim Park, ready to make that announcement on that significant project, that young boy talking about his neighborhood and the things that we shared was touching. It was even more touching when a young 8-year-old came up and started telling me about the books that he was reading. It was as if he knew how I felt about children reading a grade level. Sometimes this job can be personal, and sometimes we need to make it personal. I'm honored and pleased to have my mother, Melva James, here with me this morning. My wife. My wife, Leisha, and my children, Asia and Eric, are also here. My daughter-in-law, Jessica, along with Audra and Jason, all people I love very dearly, are also here. They've been with me every step of the way, holding me up, propping me up, supporting me, make me look better than I really am. But looking at them from this podium this morning, I'm honored to deliver the State of the City address, and I'm reminded of all the hours that mothers spend teaching their children the fundamentals of being good people, of our fundamental belief that we can see better days for our children ahead is something that we cannot abandon. Over the last year, I have, some might say unwisely, waded into the issues facing the Kansas City, Missouri School District. And trust me, I didn't do that for lack of something to do or for fun. But there are 17,000 children in this school district, and we're responsible for each child in our city. Their futures and the city's health are intertwined and inextricably interwoven. So regardless of where we live, regardless of what side of state line, regardless of if you have children in school or not, our future is tied to the success of our children. While the state of Missouri continues to wrestle with the future of the Kansas City, Missouri School District, you may have believed that we have gone silent. I assure you that would be a misstatement. Last fall, I asked Judy Heater, along with Margaret Hansborough of our staff, to convene a committee of civic and community leaders across the city to develop a proposal to ensure that every child in Kansas City reads at third grade level by third grade. This is the most important economic development initiative we can have. Last Monday, we submitted our application to the National League of Cities All-American Cities Program, who have partnered with Annie Casely Foundation to promote grade level reading across the country. We intend to not only be the first city to win the All-American Cities competition 6 times, more importantly, we intend to build a program that is sustainable and the envy of the nation where it comes to making sure that our children read at third grade level. Reading at third grade is absolutely vital to the success of any child going to school. I may not be in charge of much as mayor, but I certainly can rally the community around a goal regarding the children of this city.
You've been listening to Kansas City Mayor Sly James give his first State of the State speech here on KCUR-FM, KCUR-HD1, Kansas City Public Media. If you're just joining us here this morning, we're listening to Mayor Sly James' first State of the State address here. As I just said, we're now watching a video here at the Kansas City Convention Center that describes what the mayor just called his most important economic development initiative. It's called the Turn the Page program, and this is all about teaching all kids by the time they reach the third grade to be reading at a third grade level. Again, the mayor calling this the single most important economic development initiative he has. We're watching various screens now flash by here in the theater, talking about just one kid who cannot read and what impact that has on his life going forward. This will last for about 40 seconds longer. Again, a whole series of screens here talking about this program that is known now as the Turn the Page program. You'll be hearing Mayor Sly James talk about this a whole lot more as we move ahead during the course of this next year and onward. Again, these various slides emphasize the importance of learning to read by the third grade. The mayor has been received very positively so far. This has been a speech full of words like partnerships, trust, cooperation, and respect. The mayor talking about better days are ahead for Kansas City. And at one point, he thanked former mayors Berkeley, Cleaver, and Barnes for their work, but very pointedly omitted the name of Mayor Mark Funkhauser, his immediate predecessor.
I really want to thank our friends at Barkeley. They worked very hard on that. They put together a great presentation, and I'll tell you that you're the first group to see it as a group. This will be something that will devote over 750,000 hours of volunteer hours reading over the next 3 years. In the coming months, I want everyone in our community, on both sides of state line, both sides of truce, both sides of the river, to commit to an essential program of working with our children to ensure that they have the opportunity to have a better life. Already we have more than 50 of our city's leading organizations lending their support to the program, and more residents every day signing up to volunteer. Like I said, over the next 3 years of the project, we anticipate over 750,000 volunteer hours to accomplish the goal of preparing each child to read at grade level by third grade. 750,000 volunteer hours in pursuit of our most important community and economic development goal. If you can't read, you can't succeed. And children in Kansas City will learn to read. Because more than a city of fountains, more than a city of entrepreneurs, I'd like for Kansas City to be known as a city of readers, because you cannot be an entrepreneur if you can't read. This is an opportunity for this city to find a way to work together on a single common goal. I cannot for the life of me imagine the downside, the harm, in everybody working together to save our children. When I am told that this is not part of the charter, not part of my responsibility as mayor, I ask people to give me an example of something I am responsible for as mayor where education isn't a part. It's not involved. It's not foundational. Education is key to attracting and keeping businesses. Education is key to developing a workforce. Education is key to revitalizing our neighborhoods. If we don't have schools that work in our neighborhoods, people simply won't move back to them. And those people that we need are the young ones who are about to have children so that we can repopulate those inner city neighborhoods. If we don't take care of education, we will miss the best economic development opportunity that we have. So, what have you been up to last year? We focused on making Kansas City a part of the national conversation again. We have amazing, talented people here in this city. It's a beautiful city. As an added bonus of my election, I've also managed to keep it from snowing for the past year. And I think I'll go ahead and take credit for it, because I know that if it snowed and the street wasn't plowed, I'd sure get a phone call telling me I was responsible. A year ago, while we were running, I told you that we would emphasize four E's: enforcement, employment, efficiency, and education. We focused on each of these. We have tried to keep our promise, but I recognize that we have many, many, many more things that we need to do. We aren't even close to being finished. But problems that have existed for decades will not be solved in a single year. We have a long way to go, but we have to work together in order to get there. But I believe that even the most skeptical residents can feel a shift in the approach and the attitude and the sense of this city. Frommer's has named Kansas City one of its top destinations for 2012. We're the only American city named. Forbes named our downtown as one of the top 10 downtowns in the country. And despite the skepticism, when you see enough downtowns across the country, you know that we're doing pretty nice right here. We've been named as one of America's best places to start a business. The Wall Street Journal has named us as one of the 7 best American innovation centers. The New York Times writer wrote appropriately, "I've never seen a performing arts space that seems to relish its location so much to be so proud of the city it shows off." And he wrote that about that building right over there. Haven't even mentioned Google yet. How exciting is it for us to be one of 2 cities along with Kansas City, Kansas, to have the opportunity to build and exploit the Google 1 gigabit process? I haven't even mentioned the All-Star Game this summer. We have a lot of great things going for us, and Kansas City is indeed on the rise. My ask of each of you is that you join in, that you partner with us, that you help us to achieve the greatness for which we are destined. We can disagree about policies and positions, but we are all tied together regarding the success of this city. Even the most cynical amongst us wants to see our children succeed. We are a city finding our voice again, and together we're calling for a new day. It's an honor to be your partner. It's an extreme honor to be your mayor. I thank you for your support and dedication to the city that we all love. Welcome to the new Kansas City. Thank you all very much.
You've been listening to Kansas City Mayor Sly James give his first State of the State speech here on KCUR. He's receiving a standing ovation here at the Kansas City Convention Hall downtown, right across the street from the new Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get a reaction to the mayor's speech from some city council members themselves. And later, we'll sit down with Mayor Sly James himself. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to the second half of Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. This is a special edition of our program. We're coming to you live this morning from the Kansas City Convention Hall downtown, where Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James just gave his first State of the City address here. Got a standing ovation at the end of this address. As I mentioned earlier, this was a very positive speech. It lasted about 45 minutes. It was a speech filled with words like partnerships and trust and cooperation, respect. He talked very frequently about better days ahead for Kansas City, Kansas City being very much a city on the rise, Mayor Sly James said. Well, joining me now to talk about this speech and get some reaction to it are 3 members of the Kansas City, Missouri City Council, Mayor Pro Tem Cindy Serco. Mayor, nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
4th District Councilwoman Jan Markison. Councilwoman, nice to have you as always. And 1st District at-large Councilman Scott Wagner. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Mayor Pro Tem Serco, what did you think? What kind of speech was this as far as you were concerned?
I think it was a rallying cry. I mean, there's so much positive going on in Kansas City, and we hear it from really those people that come from out of town. They see that excitement that is built here, and we seem to be our own worst enemy. And I think that's where Sly James plays the biggest role, is gathering us all together to support what we do have and move forward together.
Councilwoman Jan Markison, did he not say anything that you expected him here to say today?
Well, he says it in a way that is very inspiring, and you kind of picked up on it. He said the word partner or partnership 41 times.
Wow.
He said the word together 17 times, the word friend 12 times, and the word success 9 times. So thanks to a word that I could check that out. But that just shows his tone. But on the other hand, he doesn't shy away from problems. We have serious budget problems. We have serious infrastructure problems. he does things in a positive way, but doesn't shy away from the issues facing us. So I'm thrilled to work with him, to work as a team with my colleagues and the manager and the mayor. And it is a new day.
I was going to say, Jan Margeson, Cindy Strickler, you two had the opportunity to serve under Mayor Mark Funkhauser. The tone in during this address is so markedly different than what we heard even 2-3 years ago, Cindy Serco.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't know that the mission is so different, but the approach is completely different. We need to be more efficient. We need to be more accountable with the dollars. We need to support what we've invested in already. And it's the tone, and it is the attitude that is different, and it is a breath of fresh air.
Councilman Scott Wagner, you know, a cynic or a critic might look at this address and say, hey, it all sounded good, but there wasn't a lot of specificity when it came to really detailing dollar costs and the precise nature of the financial challenge that faces Kansas City, Missouri. What do you say about that?
Well, I think, as I'm sure my colleague, Councilman Markeson, as our budget chair, would say, you don't need to lay it out in a speech today when it's been laid out for the last several months over and over and over again. As my colleagues would say, this is the fifth budget where we have had either flat or down revenues, and we've had to adjust to that. But I think the message that the mayor said today is well on point. The fact is that we get through this together. Everyone, through shared sacrifice, creates better value through the city. And although we've talked about this regarding the firefighters, and that's what's taken the front page, the fact of the matter is that we have had every other department of this city do those same sorts of cuts, trying to be creative with solutions. And, you know, to have him go through all those details today probably wouldn't get across what I think his message was, which was that this city is on a rise and that there are good things happening. That's what our budget discussion is for, to deliver the bad news. And I think we have had that very frank discussion in public out in every district for the last several months.
You know, Councilwoman Cindy Serco, if his tone turned more determined at any point during this 45-minute address, it came, as Scott Wagner just suggested, when he talked about the fire department. The council, as you well know, is considering a proposal from the city manager to cut millions of dollars from the fire department and lay off as many as 105 firefighters. Where does that process stand right now? What do you expect to happen when it comes to the fire department itself?
I think there's been collaboration going on. There's been multiple meetings. It is a true partnership. You can't just have the department head when there's a labor union involved. So it has to be the department and labor and management all working together. We have achieved that now. Those conversations are having. They're committed to finding the savings and being the best that they are. They're nationally known as a fire department, and they want to maintain that. So, but there's a balance between all of that, and they're working on that. And I feel confident that we'll be able to come up with the answer.
Is the city council going to back the city manager's call here for 105 firefighter layoff in the months to come?
It's not about the number of men or women that are on the job. It's about the dollars. And I think that's where those conversations are. How can we be creative in achieving the budget number that we need to achieve to balance this budget this year?
So you expect a cut to come in one form or another?
There will be a form of a cut. What it's designed to look like is that management group working together with the union to find the answer for us.
Councilwoman Jan Markeson, again, you deal with budget matters on a daily basis. What do you expect to come out of this whole conversation with the firefighters?
Well, I do think there's some productive conversations that are being had. I think once we realize that the cut to the budget was really 1.4% over last year, we are hoping that we don't have to have significant layoffs, that there are folks that might retire appropriately, and there are other cost savings that we're looking at. So public safety, obviously, is the main responsibility of a city. So we won't do anything that jeopardizes our ability to serve the public.
But in terms of cutting here, you expect that's a very real possibility.
There has to be cuts. And we have given the number of $7.6 million, and we think that is achievable.
Scott Wagner, you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think what most people continue to fall onto as the default is the original suggestion that the city manager had, and they forget what the mayor said after that, which was, if that isn't the way, find another way. And we continue to put out that challenge, and I think as both Councilwoman Serco and Councilman Markeson alluded to, we're having that conversation. At the end of the day, no one is immune from cuts. They're not. but you can still find ways to deliver the service that everyone expects, and I think that's where we're at right now.
If you're joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCOR. We're having a reaction here to Mayor Sly James' first State of the City address, which he just delivered here at the Kansas City, Missouri Convention Hall. We're visiting with Cindy Serco, Jan Markison, and Scott Wagner, all from the Kansas City, Missouri City Council. Jan Markison, a very interesting moment in this speech, I thought, when it came to economic development. The mayor said the single most important thing this city can do right now going forward is a program that he has now called the Turn the Page program, which basically involves making sure that every third grader in this city can read at a third grade level. That, he said, is more important than streetcars or a downtown convention hotel. What did you make of that?
That's absolutely right. We have heard time and again for the 5 years I've been on the council that people are our most important economic development strategy. And we have to have qualified workers. People traditionally have come to Kansas City because of the pool of qualified workers, but we don't want to fall behind. We need to have people that can be entrepreneurs. And reading is, I'm a real reader. I've been in 3 book clubs for many years and just love to read and just want to inspire our children and have the partnership between businesses and the public officials to really inspire kids and get them to read.
Cindy Serco, what did you make of that, this push on reading as the most important economic development push right now in the city?
I agree. And we have not only one district in the city, but 14. And a citywide reading program with the emphasis of making sure that we get our Kansas City School District kids reading at a third grade level is vital to the economic development in the city. It's not any one thing. It's not a tax abatement. It's not trying to attract downtown. It's a multiple cross-section of things that bring economic development. And we've gotten to that level that this is a real hindrance for us as a city, that our kids aren't the workforce that some of these companies are looking for. And we have a real responsibility, and we have the ability to do that. We're a great giving town. We're nationally known for our contributions to non-for-profits. It's time to use our talents right here at home at the street level, getting our kids up to a third grade reading level.
Well, Mayor Sly James is about to join us here at our table, but I'm just to wrap this up, Scott Wagner, I'm hearing and seeing 3 thumbs up from our 3 council members seated here at the table with me today.
Absolutely. I think to put it all in perspective, all you need to do is look at one of the slides that went up in the presentation about how people know how many prisons they need to build based on the reading level at third grade. And I think it's a very simple question. Do we want to invest now, and it doesn't even have to be money, but time and effort, to invest in kids now to get them at that reading level they need to be at, or would we prefer to save our money and build prisons later on? I think the choice is very clear.
I want to thank all 3 of you for taking some time.
Thanks
very much. That's Mayor Pro Tem Cindy Serco, 4th District Councilwoman Jan Markison, and 1st District at-large Councilman Scott Wagner. Thank you all again very much. Now joining me here at the table is the man of the hour himself, Mayor Sly James of Kansas City, just completing his first State of the City address here at the Kansas City Convention Hall downtown. He spoke for about 45 minutes, and Mayor, welcome.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Long speech, but how did you feel about it?
Long speech.
Yeah. You covered a lot of ground.
We did. We had a lot of things that we wanted to talk about. We wanted to emphasize the main theme of partnership and collaboration and how those partnerships and collaboration really work in terms of getting things done.
You know, just sitting here listening to your address, I had the impression that you felt, at least coming in here today, that the city needed a pep talk. Am I right?
I think it's always good for people to be reminded that they're special. Mm-hmm. And I think it's always good for the city to be reminded that we're special. I don't know if I call it a pep talk. I think really it's just really kind of point out some of the truths of the city, some of the things that we need to do, and some of the things that we're very successful at.
You were very clear here today, Mayor. You said Kansas City, Missouri is a city very much on the rise.
Absolutely.
How come?
Well, because we have so many things going for us here. I mean, we're sitting here in this venue, for one, and we just need to look outside the window to see perhaps the best performing arts center in the world.
It's right across the street from where we're sitting.
And yeah. Right across the street, no one would ever suspect it that the best center in the world would be here in Kansas City, but it is. And we have so much going for us in terms of our outreach to entrepreneurs, high tech going on, the things happening downtown. We have some challenges for sure, but, you know, people outside of this city recognize how much we're on the move. And sometimes I just fear that we don't inside the city recognize it. So it's always good to remind ourselves.
Did you think it was important to sort of contrast your attitude and approach to Kansas City, Missouri, with your predecessor's mayor, Mayor Mark Funkhauser? At one point in the speech, you very pointedly thanked Mayor Kay Barnes for her work, Mayor Emanuel Cleaver, Mayor Dick Berkley. You did not mention Mayor Funkhauser. Are you contrasting yourself very deliberately with his work the last 4 years?
Not really. I was simply pointing out some of the things that have been done that were relevant to what we were talking about. Downtown was Mayor Kay Barnes. The other things that were there before downtown was redeveloped was Cleaver and Berkley. I didn't even think, frankly, about Mayor Funkhauser when we were doing the speech. What we were trying to point out was the good things that had happened and to point out that despite the fact that some of those things have been expensive, that in the overall and the long run, they're very good for this city.
I just was talking to your members of a council that you work with and pointing out that one thing that really surprised me about the speech was your assertion very directly, Mayor, that the single most important economic development tool that faces this city right now is this new program you're calling the Turn the Page program, getting all kids in Kansas City reading at a third grade level when they're in third grade. Why is that moved up to number one over convention hotels and streetcar systems and everything else?
Because one of the things that we absolutely have to do is to repopulate our neighborhoods and to keep people in this city. And you and I both know that as soon as a young couple having children get married and they're starting to have children, one of the first things they do is leave. That has an impact on our ability to repopulate and maintain our neighborhoods. If we want young people to stay, have their children here, raise their children in Kansas City, we must address education. It's one of the first reasons they leave, and it's one of the hardest things to turn around. If we want to revitalize a neighborhood, we can clean up the crime, we can build new houses. But if there's not children or there's not schools that work in those neighborhoods, young folks of child-rearing age aren't going to come there.
You know, you clearly, and you, I think you mentioned it today, you seem to have stepped away from this talk of taking over the Kansas City, Missouri school district. Is this sort of a substitute for that, this focus on education and reading right now?
Not really, because we started with this program in October of last year, long before the school accreditation issue came about. This was something that we had contemplated and were beginning to work on before Dr. Covington left, before the school district lost its accreditation. Reading at grade level is absolutely fundamental to the success of children in school, and it's also something, quite frankly, that is not limited to just one school district. We want to reach out to the children across this entire city, every one of the 14 school districts. Every child's ability to read at grade level is important.
And you pointed out there's already a lot of buy-in to this program, lots of companies, lots of people signing up to volunteer to help out with Turn the Page.
Correct. We've had great success. It's really interesting. We've had all the school districts that have bought into it. And one of the things that we found as we were putting things together is that we weren't sharing data across district lines. Now we're sharing data across district lines. So we're going to have a picture of not only what happens in one district or the other, but what's happening with children across this city. And one of the things that we've learned is that 67% of all the children in this city do not read at grade level, at third grade.
Wow.
67%. That needs to be turned around.
And the time to turn it around is to get them early before they get much older.
When you consider that 85% of a child's intellectual capacity is developed by age 5, we need to get to them as early as we possibly can. So read to your children every day. We all need to be attuned to that. We need to spend time with children reading and getting them to read with us. Not just us reading to them, but have them read to us. And it doesn't have to always be some structured book. It can be a comic book. It can be a sports page. But reading is something that we all must do and that the children must do. So, you know, this is something that we feel strongly about. There's 160 cities across the country who sent in their initial applications back in last, I think, October. We were one of them, and now we're in the competition to find out if we're selected by the committee on the All-American Cities campaign to be one of those cities going forward for the next 3 years.
And if we are, what does that mean for the city, Mayor?
Then we actually have access to some funding and some support and some experts on various issues that we might not have otherwise. But even if we're not, we're still going ahead with our program.
Now, one of the things you didn't deal with in great specificity today was sort of the enormous financial challenges facing the city. You're on the hook for a multi-billion dollar sewer project. There's talk about a downtown convention hotel, a streetcar system, lots of different pieces out there. Where are you going first? What needs to happen first? What can the city afford right now?
Well, the first thing that I'd like to see happen is to get a report back from the Citizens Commission on Municipal Revenue.
That you appointed, and that was a campaign promise of yours.
Exactly, and we expect to have that back soon. That will add some clarity to some things, and we'll be able to determine what our situation is and how best to approach it. That's number one. And then we need to have that serious conversation about, are we going to really invest in our infrastructure and try to get some of these things taken care of? We are falling further and further behind. Eventually, we have to fix it. We have no money devoted to the 60 bridges that are in states of repair. None. We have to do something about those things. We have a water system that's 100 years old. We have to do something about it. So those are things, baseline things, that we have to do just to ensure that we're structurally sound. The other things, the amenities, we'll layer them in as we have opportunity, but we need to be financially smart about them. But the things that I want to see us do is take care of some of the basics and to make the investments in the future, like with our streetcar plan. This is a program whose time has come. The timing is right, and the timing in the future to go back and try to do it again is extremely uncertain. So we need to try to see if we can move that along here now in this good a way, as fair a way as possible.
We're visiting with Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James. You know, Mayor, you came out just a couple of weeks ago and proposed borrowing $1 billion to take care of these very same infrastructure issues that you talked about. You didn't mention it much today. How hard are you going to push that idea going forward?
Well, the idea is, it certainly got a lot of people's attention.
Yes, it did.
But you know what? The fact of the matter is that that's what we wanted to do, is we wanted people to say, wow, that's a lot of money. But in the process of saying, wow, that's a lot of money, for them to recognize that that doesn't even cover all the things that we need to do. So it's not something that we have to have in exactly that form. We've been talking about different permutations, different ways to approach it. And what we're really trying to do is to find the best possible way, with the least burden on our taxpayers, to do what we absolutely have to do. We have to fix our roads, bridges, water, all of those things that are crucial to maintaining a city of this size.
But exactly what form, you're not saying yet. You expect to have a specific proposal sometime between now and the end of this year?
We're hoping that we do. We have people looking at different permutations, different ways of finding revenue, how much do we need at the beginning versus the end. We're looking at every possibility to make sure that we've, going back to exactly what we try to do, fact-based, data-based problem solving. And that means we have to look at number of examples and opportunities to figure out which one is the best under the circumstances.
You know, Mayor, I get the impression from reading about you and the work you're doing these days that you're going to push very hard on this downtown streetcar system. You're getting some blowback from business owners who are saying the tax to pay for that will be too burdensome. But it sounds like you want to go ahead in some form or fashion, no matter what.
We want, yes. And I think that there is a need for it. And we have to start somewhere. We constantly talk about transportation over and over again. We've got this plan, that plan. We've got Clay Chastain that comes in with different plans, yada, yada, yada. But we've never actually started. Here we are. We've got a chance for a $25 million Tiger Grant. We funded the studies and the engineering studies that need to be done. We can actually do this if we can find the right funding mechanism.
You're going to Washington, I think, today to talk about that, right?
We'll meet with Secretary LaHood tomorrow, Mike Sanders and I.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And Mike has a plan to bring commuter rail from eastern Jackson County and other places to tie in with it. We have to recognize what other cities have already recognized, and that is gas is going to go higher. people need to still get into downtown and into the center parts of the city. We have to provide some form of mass transit that's more efficient than what we've got now.
Right. Mayor, I sure enjoyed having you. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
On.
Thank you, Steve. It's always good to
see
you.
You bet, Mayor. That's Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Kathleen Pointer, Danny Alexander, Chris Pruitt, Maria Carter, and Kim Noble. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and our thanks to the mayor's office for their help with today's broadcast. And you are up to date.